Well, I just want to say thank you so much for returning my call. I thought I would just put it out there, send my email and phone number to you and hope for the best. I'm really glad you called. I truly appreciate this. As I mentioned, I've been serving as an elder for 17 years now. I'm just not sure how much longer I can keep this up. You're aware we had Kingdom Ministry School, right? They're introducing this new arrangement of removing elders whose kids are going to college. Just recently, I served on a case within my own congregation. We had to remove a good man. Why, you ask? His two sons, twins, both got accepted to state college. And the elders started saying that some of the friends are upset, feeling disturbed by their actions. A lot of the brothers in the hall work at the mill, without college degrees. So Brother Davis had a chance for his kids to go to state college with full scholarships. The twins are even staying at home and not living on campus. This circuit overseer was persistent. I'm just not sure how much more of this I can handle. I'm about to head into another elders meeting. Can I call you back? Thank you so much, JT. I truly appreciate it. And please say hello to Lady C for me. Take care. Goodbye.
You're listening to The Critical Thought, where we challenge our listeners to use critical thinking when examining the teachings of Jehovah's Witnesses.
Hey, this is JT. Along with my beautiful wife, Lady C, and our special guest, Jerry Minor. The video that you just saw is interesting because that is what many elders in this organization will be facing as they have elders being deleted simply because their children want to go to school. And that is so sad to see that take place in an organization that we used to be a part of. Many of us still have family who are in this organization. And we know in the last couple of weeks, there's been a video of showing of an elders training school. And in this training school, they showed how elders would be handled. Now, this is the thing. There are over 100,000 congregations of Jehovah's Witnesses. This is going to be very interesting because each congregation is different. So this evening, we're going to get into the discussion. We know that many have, the video's been out for a week, and we want to thank Warwick Pimo, along with ex-JW Panda Tower, providing us some great footage. And this evening, we're going to take some specific looks at some of the things in this video that was released by Warwick Pimo. I had a chance to dialogue with him this past week, told him, be careful. The Watchtower loves nothing more than a good witch hunt. And so he does this at great risk, providing all of us with information that otherwise we literally would not have access to. In fact, your average Jehovah's Witness did not get access to this. So we're very thankful for him providing that for us. This evening, as I said, we have a special guest, Jerry Minor. Many of us, we came to know him from Saturday Night Live. I did not know that he was a Jehovah's Witness for many years. And then we saw him on the Leah Remedy documentary that dealt with CSA issues. And today, Jerry is on one of the most popular shows on television today, Abbott Elementary. Jerry, would you like to share just a little bit about your background and how you are involved in the Jehovah's Witness, how that came about?
Sure. Thanks, JT. Lady C, it's good to be with you. I was raised Jehovah's Witness. My mother became one. I think she got baptized when I was around 10. She started studying when I was around 7. I had some other relatives that were witnesses. I have an aunt and some other cousins that didn't live in the same town. But my mother was reached through the door-to-door work. I'm sure my aunt had talked to her, previously before that. But she was reached in the door-to-door work. And right around 1975, she started studying, and then she got baptized around 1977, I think. Yeah. So obviously, I was her son, so I was raised by her, and she took me to the Kingdom Hall, and I was raised as a Jehovah's Witness youth. My mother was very, very steadfast, so to speak, in the truth. She was a pioneer, regular pioneer. Like I said, she got baptized in 77. I was raised in it, and I got baptized in 1984, I believe, when I was 17. I was subsequently disfellowshipped when I was around 19, 20, 20 years old. Okay. I was also a pioneer. I was an auxiliary pioneer, I think, back then. I don't know if they still have auxiliary pioneer. They probably do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Also, you know, had, you know, functions in the Kingdom Hall, had some, you know, a few responsibilities, or what they would call, what did they call them?
Privileges.
Privileges, yeah. Privileges. Yes. Had a few privileges in the hall, you know.
Free labor.
Yes, the free labor, you know, doing the microphones, working in the literature counter, you know, stuff like that, working on quick builds. So I was very steeped in the witness culture, yeah, so to speak.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why we were glad that you were able to come on, because you, myself, my wife, and so many of it in our audience. And this is really the whole thing for our audience. We want you to share your experience of how this organization has impacted. And this actually goes even beyond just college. It goes to how the organization impacts our lives and affects us in the terms of opportunities, because of how we're often the culture. It keeps mm-hmm. you basically hemmed down. And we know with the higher education is absolutely off the chain. It really mm-hmm. is. Yeah.
Yes, that's true. I pursued what they would call kingdom interest when I was growing up. And so I did not pursue a college education. I know that there are witnesses that are, and I'm sure that we'll get into this.
Yeah.
But from my understanding of the literature and everything that was encouraged with me while I was going through high school and even in junior high, and even in elementary, I was encouraged to pursue other kingdom interests other than pursuing a higher education. That was talked to me, drilled in my head from the time that I can remember, from the time that we started going to the Kingdom Hall, that college wouldn't be the thing to do. And one thing to do would be maybe to learn a trade, to get a good trade. The best thing to do would do what you did, JT, is to go to Bethel.
Yeah, that's full-time service, all I talked about.
And full-time service and to pioneer, yes. And so that was my goal, and that was what I did.
Yeah. I when we look at this issue of education this evening, we're going to look at it in a multifaceted aspect of what Jehovah's Witnesses tell people about their views on education and mm-hmm. what videos like this allow us to see behind the curtain, which really reveals how they really feel about the subject of higher education or supplementary education. I think it's important. In 1992, something happened in the organization that, for a lot of us, when we heard this, we felt a sigh of relief. We felt, oh my goodness, it's about time. It's about time. Because we thought, and I remember having this conversation, we thought that the society, the branch, the organization, governing body, faithful slave, whatever moniker you want to use, we thought that they were finally taking their foot off the back of the necks of Jehovah's Witnesses when it came to this subject of higher education. And we're going to play a couple of clips that's related to what they said in 1992, because it really sets the tone. And we're going to see how this was from the faithful slave, spirit-directed information. This is very important. We keep this in mind, because this is really going to be the theme throughout. This is spirit-directed information. And we wanted to just share these two simple clips, but they're very profound in terms of what they were telling Jehovah's Witnesses when it came to higher education. November 1st, 1992 Watchtower said, "So when parents and young Christians today, after careful and prayerfully weighing the pros and the cons, decide for or against post-secondary studies, others in the congregation should not criticize them. 5 years later, because some Jehovah's Witnesses did not understand, August 15, 1997, such decisions are a family responsibility, and others should not criticize the course taken." And I remember having a conversation with people after the Watchtower study that Sunday. And the key word that stood out was criticize. Mm-hmm. Criticize. That's very profound when a religious denomination tells its members not to criticize people for the decision that they have made. And that was really the proper position for the organization to have. This ain't none of our business. Y'all not asking us to pay for it. So, but of course, we know that things shifted. Many people, I remember having a conversation with a circuit overseer a few years later. In the Watchtower study, they talked about how it was important that if you're going to go to college, you go because you want to go in full-time service. And young people all around, I mean, everybody, I'm going to college to be a lawyer, a doctor, so I can take care of myself in the pioneer work. But do you really think that was why they was going? No, they felt it was now an opportunity because the Watchtower had got their back and young people were telling them that. And so the video,
when we were coming along, I don't even think they had an alternative. That was just, we just didn't do it. Mm-hmm. Like what Jerry said earlier about the, going to college and going to get a trade. That was the reason why I went to like a business school. And when being from Michigan, I think Jerry, you said you're from Michigan as well. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There was this college called Baker College.
Oh yeah.
And I was in high school and I went to Baker College for this business office education program. And I was interested in accounting. And at the time, Baker College was a good 50 miles. So they got more colleges like that around Michigan now that's closer to where I'm from. But at mm-hmm. the time, it was a good 50 miles from my house. So if I wanted to, and I went there to go, we went to go compete in business activities when I was in high school. And that was one of the things that I was interested in. So I wanted to go to school to be an accountant at that time. But I knew I couldn't go to Baker because Baker would require an overnight stay. Because at the time, I knew I wasn't going to be driving back and forth to college every day, going 50 miles one way. So I remember driving home from school one day and thinking about what I was going to do after I got out of high school. And I remember saying to myself, college was not an option. And I knew that that's just something I wasn't going to be pursuing, you know. And so then, you know, as time went on, and I was telling one of my uncle-in-law, and he told me how he told his two daughters, because he was not a witness, that he wanted them to get some education. Mm-hmm. And he told me some years ago, he told me this a couple years ago before he passed. He said, I looked at you and the other kids that was, you know, in our family. And he said, and I felt so sorry for you guys because you weren't going to college. And I was like, You were telling your daughters to go to college. And I said, I was looking for somebody to tell me what to do. And I just had no direction because my mom and dad were not the crazy. My dad wasn't a witness at the time, but my mother was not the fanatical witness. And so if I would have wanted to go to college at the time, she probably would have approved of it. But mm-hmm. I did not know I could go because I had been thoroughly indoctrinated by this religion that no, college was not an option.
Yeah.
You know,
Jerry, did you ever think about going to college yourself, man?
Yeah. It's a really good question. No. And that was decided for me, like I said, during grade school. So by the time I got to college, I had already visited Bethel. I think we went to go visit Bethel when I was in the eighth grade. And I got to see, you know, everything there. And so when I got back, after talking to my mother, we pretty much made a plan on what my education would be going forward. Now, I had already gone to school. No, I hadn't started as a freshman, so I'd be starting as a freshman that year. And she was saying, well, you should take classes that can help you in Bethel. And the high school that I happened to go to had a printing program. Actually, it wasn't the high school I went to. We had a magnet program in our city in Flint. And actually, Baker College was up in Flint. It was up there. That's why you had to drive so far. we had a printing program in the high school, and it wasn't at my high school, so I would have to take a bus in the morning and go take these classes and learn how to print. And it was a specifically non-college track. So I had to, you know, when you're taking your courses at the beginning of the year, my counselor said, okay, you're on a what was called a pre-college track, you know, yeah. So you're getting all the courses that you need to get so that when you apply for college, you have all the necessary requirements. I didn't have that. I didn't want to do that. So I said, well, I'm not doing that. I'm going vocational. And that they probably don't do that nowadays, but back then they did, you know, they'd be like, well, you're going to go college or vocational. And even back then they were saying like, nobody's doing vocational. And I grew up in Michigan, you know, I grew up in a place where it was industrial and a lot of people had vocations. And they were saying like, at that point in time in the '80s, those jobs were dying. They were drying up. And so they were telling us in the school, look, nobody's doing this anymore.
Yeah.
You can learn a vocation, but you should get some college prep, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I decided not to do that. I had no college prep and took all these classes, these printing classes. and then JT, you know, this the story, I asked the Bethelite, hey, I took all these printing classes. And they were like, so what? You come here, you're going to be washing dishes.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that was one of the big things that would happen when people would go to the Bethel meeting at the summer conventions. They would often tell the Bethel representative, you know, I'm going to school, I'm taking classes in this, and when I get to Bethel, can I get a job in at the park? And they just shoot you down. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really unfortunate. And Lady C and I, we always make a point when we're talking to people about higher education or college, especially Jehovah's Witnesses, is we always try to make the point that everybody doesn't need to go to college.
Right.
Everybody doesn't want to go to college. Everybody don't have to go to college. And there are many jobs out there that you can get, and you can make more money than people who do go to college. Mm-hmm. But that is not the issue. The issue is that you belong to a religion that takes opportunities for you to use your natural gifts and talents away from you.
Mm-hmm.
We were discussing about how witnesses can't even literally move to another city. If a Jehovah's Witness was announcing, I'm moving, the young person, I'm moving over to so-and-so, you know, job opportunity over there, you know, they were like, well, no, you need to stay here. You know, mm-hmm. Where are you going? And I remember this so vividly because when I was at Bethel, we had a brother from a branch in Nigeria, and he asked me a question once. He says, do you remember the article the Watchtower had on, you know, should I move to another country?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, I vaguely remember it. It didn't stand out, nothing special. He said, of course not, because in America, most kids who reach 18, 19 years old don't move to another country. But in many countries around the world, when people finish high school, they may, especially many times in the African countries, they may move to Europe or somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so those articles were specifically written basically for people who were in those circumstances. And many times these were opportunities that these people would lose. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't get. Yeah, I mean, they wouldn't get. So, you know, this organization, it has a long track record, Jerry. I mean, we was talking about this before, of discouraging its young people. I think the words of Charles Taz Russell were probably the best. What Mr. Russell said, it just drives deep. I mean, this man's views just goes home.
My advice is then, give your children an education up to the public school limit, not even attempting to take them through high school.
Oops, I'm sorry. I put that up there too fast. Not even attempting.
Can you believe that?
Well, you know what? They really don't want that. They don't want the competition.
Yeah, JT, can you see, believe that, that a lot of this is, you know, the same thing as the beard policy and stuff like that. It's become culture. It's become tradition. And you can see that at some point, somebody had to say in the 90s, hey, what are we doing here? I mean, yeah, you know, we're asking for people.
And someone did. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we need these skills, even in our organization. We're asking for these skills and we're telling people two things. We're telling them not to go, but college is good, but don't pursue it. And so it seems like in the 90s that somebody smartened up and said, hey, wait a minute, we got to say something. The people are getting criticized for this and nobody knows what the policy is. And then, like you said, 97, nope, this is our tradition. This is what we are. And yeah, we don't do that. We don't go to college.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, it's amazing. And see, this is the whole thing for us and our channel and for a lot of former Jehovah's Witnesses. We know that you may not be able to get a Jehovah's Witness out. You know, it doesn't matter what the Watchtower says. They're gonna go with it. They can change the mar and then change it back. They'll still stay. But this is so important for people who are studying, people who are non-Jehovah's Witnesses who have a chance. These people have a chance to learn stuff that we did not get a chance to learn. Our parents did not get a chance to learn. In fact, for those who are online right now, we invite you, please share in the comments. Yeah, share in the comments how these policies have affected you financially, your personal growth, how they have impacted you. Because what we want to do, we want to document this, because we're going to take a copy of all the comments and we're going to include it in with the video when we post it. So that people in a year or two, they'll be able to read people telling life story, because this is not a one-off. We're talking over 100 years when Russell was alive, over 100 years. And these guys have still been telling young people, don't. And so this is very unfortunate. But the video, I think Lady C and I was just talking, and I wanted to pose it to you, Jerry. When you saw this video, what did you think?
I saw Warwick Pimo, is that his name?
Yeah, Warwick Pimo.
Put it up.
Yeah.
It took me a couple of days. I was like, oh, I'm gonna watch this one. It looks like a training video. Look, that looks like something that you ain't supposed to see. Rank and file's not supposed to see this. Right. So I didn't get to see him, or you know what? I did. I watched it, but I was doing dishes and I was doing some other stuff. And then I kind of caught what was happening like during the middle, because I was like, I was listening to it. I wasn't really watching it. And it made me realize what was happening in the video. And then he had some comments at the end. And then I realized what it was. And so right after that, I went on another channel to watch somebody, this Alt-Worldly, I think. He was like doing a discussion.
Yeah.
And in the middle of it, it went off. The video went off. Yeah. But I a little bit later than that, I got to see the whole thing. I mean, look, it makes me so angry to have to go through that, because and this is part of my story too. My mother, when she was studying, she was studying to become a nurse right at the time. And she had just decided, she was just newly divorced, and just decided to go to school. And while she was studying, she decided, you know what, this is enough. I'm going to become a licensed practical nurse. I'm not going to go ahead and become a registered nurse, because that's more school. It's going to be more time in school, and I've already done enough. And I used to always think, I'm like, we could have so much more money. We could have, you know, why are you stopping? You know, didn't make any sense to me. And then there were also other registered nurses in our kingdom hall. They were right there. People that we knew, and this happened all the time. Anytime, like people in my kingdom hall that went to college all the time, and I'd say, "Well, why can't I do it?"
Yeah,
they're not doing what they're supposed to do, you know. But yeah, I was saying, like that was early on. My mother was studying, and then she decided to nip her education in the bud.
Yeah, I wanted to share someone's comments, because it's very, very, it's a very, very good comment. Abbott Soul. He said, it was worth, and I have no regrets. The Jehovah's Witnesses hurt me deeply, and I still feel the pain. But professionally, I've been able to move forward. I encourage anyone to go out there. And that's kind of, you know, the way it has been for many of us. The pain is deep. We see the impact. And, you know, it was very good to see that this particular poster, he was able to professionally, financially get himself back together. But for so many, and we've had this come, ladies and gentlemen, we've talked to people on the phone, you know, just in general, over the years that we've been involved in activism, and the stories we heard people tell of, you know, how it put them behind the eight ball somewhat. And of course, you know, you move on, do the best you can, but you realize what the cause is. You realize what impacted you. I mean, something as simple as saving money. You know, you figure the world coming to an end, you know, why are you going to buy an insurance policy for 20 years or buy some stock and say, well, it'll grow in 20, because it'll be a new system around the corner. It's almost here. So that's the kind of stuff that you have.
Yeah. Lady C, a lot of people, a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Oh, I was going to say that a lot of people made bad decisions based on the information that they got from the Watchtower. And like you said about the money, it's just why when you're young, you don't want to be disciplined sometimes, like in terms of I got to be so structured. Because when I'm 22 years old, the world is like my oyster. I'm all over the place. I'm not going to get old. I see older people. I see people who are struggling. But as a young person, I was like, hey, look, I got plenty of time, you know. So going to school and trying to save money. I mean, that was not my goal. I guess it was like, I'm so glad I'm in the truth because I ain't got to do all that. And then you start getting older and you're like, wait a minute, I need money. I need education. I need everything I need. Because now what's going on now in the world is people who do have an education and people who do have good jobs are now starting to become, they said that people are starting to get poor now because, you know, housing is so expensive. And like we live in a DC area and a one bedroom apartment is going for $2,000.
Well, I live in LA, so that's nice. Oh, can I have that? I'll take that place right now.
Just stop it.
Let me give you a perfect example.
It's more than that in LA. Well, I can imagine. I can imagine that being more expensive, but it's pretty bad. A studio apartment is going for $1,500. So,
We used to live over in the area in D.C. is known as Alexandria, Virginia, which is like 15 minutes from downtown D.C. You just take the 14th Street Bridge, the bridge that the plane hit years ago, that snowy morning. And so you're 15 minutes from D.C. If you want to live that close to downtown 16th Capitol Street, you're going to pay for it. And unfortunately, man, we have witnesses who have actually had to leave the area because of that. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to that money thing and so forth. So the video has some interesting points in. We want to take a look at some clips. Lady C, anytime you're ready, we want to take a look at this clip. This is amazing.
Okay, so here's the clip.
Considering this matter regarding Brother Brown and the impact that his family situation is having on the congregation. I asked you, brothers, to review his qualifications as an elder after we spoke, and Brother Brown had an opportunity to explain to me some of the decisions that he's made for his family. I'm aware that you, brothers, have considered this matter before, but since then, another one of Brother Brown's daughters have enrolled in a school for higher education, which raises questions as to how this affects the congregation. When we make decisions, it's important that we consider the conscience of the congregation as well as the elder body. Brother Brown, I know this can't be easy for you, and it's not easy for us either. Please be assured that we love you, and we only want what's best for you and your family. Oh. Remember, you're among friends here, so please feel free to express yourself and to answer any questions that your fellow elders may have. Brothers, we are obligated to put the interests of the congregation first.
Brothers, with all due respect, I don't agree with you that the congregation is disturbed about my or my family's situation. I've been in the congregation for 20 years. I know the publishers very well, and I'm sure no one is disturbed about my daughter's pursuing higher education. As far as my younger daughter is concerned, she was judicially reproved, but it wasn't announced to the congregation, so she's repentant. And no one has approached me expressing that they're disturbed about me supporting my daughters seeking higher education, trying to better themselves. It's not like they're leaving the truth.
Brother Brown, thank you for expressing how you feel. Let's give your fellow elders an opportunity to express their observations or concerns. Brothers, are there any comments or questions that you have for Brother Brown? Brother Anderson, please.
Brother Brown, it is true. Some of the congregation have been negatively affected. They've been disturbed by the example of your daughters pursuing higher education. You've openly talked about wanting the best life for your daughters. And this has given some the impression that the only way to get the best life, it's not through spiritual things, but through secular pursuits. Some of the congregation are even confused about what the organization has stated regarding pursuing higher education. In fact, Sister Single's daughter is considering pursuing higher education because of the example of your daughters.
Thank you, Brother Anderson. Brother Williams, please.
And just because the brothers and sisters have not approached you about this matter doesn't mean that they're not disturbed by what they see. They understand that it's a personal decision and that's something that you have to decide, but it still doesn't mean that your freeness of speech is not affected. In fact, the freeness of speech of the entire body of elders, as well as how successful we are as shepherds, has been affected as well. As Brother Anderson mentioned, when we promote the full-time ministry as the best way of life, this situation has now influenced how some of the congregation set that as a goal, or even want to set that as a goal for their life.
Andy, the scriptural qualifications at 1 Timothy chapter 3 say that an overseer in verse 4 and 5 should be a man presiding over his own household in a fine manner, having his children in subjection with all seriousness. Verse 3 says they should be reasonable, not quarrelsome. Now, I know this is difficult for you. It's difficult for us too.
Don't tell me about being difficult. When we started this discussion, you all brothers said you love me and my family. Right now, I'm not feeling it. You've been nothing but negative.
Brother Brown, thank you for your comments. Please take a seat in the other room, and we'll call you back when we make our decision.
Yeah. Now, Jerry, let me ask you something. Like I said, you know, we want to give the accolades to XJW Panda Tower. I think he was able to grab that the video when Warwick Pimo went down, and which as you mentioned, it was right in the middle of Alt World. He was doing a broadcast, so we appreciate everybody for being able to help get that information out. But let me ask you a question, Jerry. You know, you're in Hollywood. You write scripts. Mm-hmm. When you look at the script that they wrote at Bethel and their character development, what goes through your mind?
Well, I mean, obviously it's for an audience, and you know what? I do a lot of this kind of writing too. I do a lot of business writing, you know, like when I'm not working on stuff. So for corporate videos, seminars and stuff like that. I've done a lot of writing for that. And this, you know, obviously reminds me of that. Every time I see one of their training videos, it's like a corporate video. And, you know, I'm sure that's the approach that they've given it. The Watchtower Society is so corporate. But first of all, the acting is so bad.
Yeah.
But they know exactly what they're doing. That's the other thing.
Oh,
it's like, it is so well done. As far as I know that scenario, and I've never been in an elders meeting in my life, but I know that happens. I mean, I've been in a judicial committee, and that's what that feels like. And there's that thing of like, this is something that the rank and file Jehovah's Witness would never see. They don't know this happens unless you get into a judicial committee. And when that happens, that's when you know, oh, okay, that's how it happens. That's what happened to me. I had no idea what a judicial committee was like until it happened to me. And I thought it was completely different. And I was raised a Jehovah's Witness. And so this is the kind of thing that they're going to have to go through when they watch that. But one of the biggest things that I thought was, you know, the idea of the rest of the congregation feeling a certain way and him saying, nobody said anything to me. Nobody's come up to me and said that they were stumbled by this, but obviously people are talking behind his back. Is that okay? And they're just like, this is what happens. Yeah. People, yeah, somebody else is going to do what you did. So,
yeah, that was the, you know, it goes back to those two clips that we read at the very beginning of the program.
Mm-hmm.
The Watchtower told Jehovah's Witnesses all around the world that one, it is a personal decision, and two, not to criticize. Because when you criticize someone, that means that what they're doing is wrong. That's what that means. You're criticizing a person because he's doing something wrong. That's the message that people who are not Jehovah's Witnesses need to understand. The reason those people were walking around the hall criticizing and being disturbed is because they felt what he and his family were doing was wrong. And I know as an elder, and I'm sure if you watch the comment section of anybody who is an elder, who's been an elder, they will tell you one of the best get out of jail free cards when the elders want to take action in the congregation is to make the claim, friends are talking, brothers are concerned.
Yep.
And what you often find, and so when I became an elder, you know, I remember asking this brother once, I said, so man, how many friends are you talking about, man?
Just a couple.
And I said, well, who are they?
My wife and one of the pioneers was able to discuss.
Me.
Like it's just your wife and another sister. We're gonna sit and have a we meet on Saturday all day like it's a congregation matter. And
there have been times when the elder came up to me and I know it was him. I know it was like, yeah, nobody said that but you.
Ain't nobody said
you don't like my tie. Well, some people in the congregation talking about your tie. You brought it up to him. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yes. And so they will use that as an opportunity to move forward. And the circle of a seer. I thought what was so interesting was how part of the character development was how stoic these brothers were. Oh my God. I mean, like stone, you know, I mean, just unreal. And the only person they made have any emotion was the father.
Brother Brown.
Right. But that circuit overseer, he was like, Oh, what about you, Brother Anderson? You know, it was almost like he was so mild and so calming. Yes. And then, like you said, JT, the brother that they were trying to rake over the coals, he was sounding like if they could have put a scene where fire was coming out of his nose, you know, they would have done that. I mean, they just tried to make it seem so bad, you know.
And because that's a situation where anybody, any human would naturally be upset. People talking behind my back. Exactly. And then they come to me. Yeah, I'm going to be mad about it. But they put that in this. But to juxtapose that to, well, I'm so calm, brother. Would you mind if I just say a prayer? Because you're out of control.
This brother's
going to be out of control.
You sound just like
you sure do. This man was ready to perform a beatdown for all those guys back there. You know he was.
Exactly.
But you know it's interesting because
I feel the same way, bro. JT, I'm not above being a 60-year-old man rolling around on the floor with them brother. If I had a chance to go back to my judicial committee right now, man, it'd have been a. You thought
cruising for a bruising, right? But you know what they were supposed to have done, which is this is what's wrong with this organization. They pick and choose when and where, and they will invoke this is God's arrangement all the way along the line.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They were supposed to, when that sister or brother came to them, they were supposed to say, well, what does the Watchtower say? They were supposed to have taken that person to the Watchtower and said, well, this is what the Watchtower says about when a family decides to go to college. It's a personal choice, and you and I should not criticize their choice. That's what they were supposed to have done. And like the point you made was, he said nobody came to him. Well, what did Jesus say? Jesus says, if you got something against your brother, you go to your brother. So the elder was supposed to say, well, have you talked to the brother Brown about what he's doing?
Oh, no, I need y'all to do it.
And then you said another step too. You're supposed to bring another person before it goes to the committee, right?
That's it.
Two witnesses.
Two witnesses, right?
And then you go to another. Yeah.
Yeah.
But they don't do that in the congregation though, because all you got to do is have just one person come in there, and then they're gonna start the brothers will start going around interviewing people, asking questions and probing.
Unless it's some kind of assault, a child assault.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
That's a great point. Let's see. That generally speaking, if one person reports something to the elders, they go get the posse. They go get the posse. That's right. We ready to ride.
But you know what they also do? What they also do is the sisters, because you know, like there's so many people out in field service, the elders' wives know everything, out in field service in the car groups. That's where all the gossiping takes place, right out there. You know.
You know, it reminds me of a story. You know, when I was first coming in, my mother was first coming in. I was supposed to go to a camping retreat with my class in school. And we went to the house that my mother studied with. So we were at their house, and my mother and I was and I went over there to borrow a fishing rod. I said, "Hey, can I borrow a fishing rod? I'm going this camping trip tomorrow for class." "Sure, come on over." Took my mother in the back room, talked to her for a minute. I go home. This is the night before I'm going to go to my camping trip. The night before, you can't go.
Oh,
why? Why? Jehovah wouldn't want you to go. You can't be around those kids. Those are worldly kids. I'm like, wait a minute, what happened? We were getting ready to go, and then we went over to your house that you stayed. That she told you that I can't go on my camping trip, and that's why I'm not going, because she said it. You had already said it. Yes. Yeah. And now, half of her kids didn't go in the truth. Half of them, she still talked to them. Great family, nice old family. You know, my mother never talked to me again after I get this fellowship. You know, from the start of, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, she's telling somebody else what to do with their kids. And then those kids grow up, don't go in the truth. She's telling my mother to do something so that I get this fellowship, and then my mother don't talk to me. Those kids don't go into truth. She has a relationship with her kid.
Yeah.
That's very sad.
Yeah.
Nonsense.
Yeah.
I really hate that happened to you, Jerry, but you know what? It's so interesting how Jehovah's Witnesses, we tell all of our business, no matter what it is, we're constantly just running our mouths. Cause my mother, she had her own mind, and she would do things and tell brothers, you know, to go somewhere and sit down. But but she had these things about going to the meetings. She had a thing about she was going to be at her meetings. Mm-hmm. She wasn't celebrating no holidays and no birthdays. So that's who she was. So she was going to do what the Watchtower said, but there were certain things you weren't going to get in her business doing. But a lot of people made decisions just like your mother. They would be talking to somebody in a congregation. Next thing you know, your plans are now derailed because somebody has said something, and this is not going to be a good thing to be over there with them worldly kids, you know?
Yeah.
And some of them worldly kids was probably better trained than the kids at the Kingdom Hall.
Of course. Yeah. And that woman had us come over to her house knowing that she was going to do that, knowing that she was going to tell my mother. When we said we wanted to borrow that fishing rod, knowing that she was going to tell her that he shouldn't go to that thing, invited us over instead of saying like, "No, can't give you the fishing rod or whatever, or you know, whatever. We can't let you borrow it, or you know, whatever. My husband's got him, whatever excuse." Or even before we got over there to borrow the fishing rod, we went all the way over to their house, got the fishing rod. I get home and can't go.
Oh,
got to wake up in the morning to go. Can't even tell the kids I'm not going. People are like, "What happened to you?
You just didn't show up. You just didn't show
yesterday
up.
Yesterday you were coming." Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to say something else too about that. Something about that video too, because, you know, when I got this fellowship, and there's a whole story behind that, and we can get into it later on. But regardless of that, when I got this fellowship, I was still living at home. I was an adult. I was 19, 20. My mother asked me to leave. And at that point, I didn't have I was working for some other Jehovah's Witnesses, cleaning restaurants. Didn't have a good job because I didn't go to college. Everybody else that was in my peer group that I went to school with, they were off at school, going for college. I'm still like cleaning up floors and washing windows at 19, 20 years old with no background, no education, and no future for a job. And now all of a sudden, I get this fellowship, and I'm already working for Witnesses. So now I have nothing. And then my mother asked me to leave the house. And that would really surprise me, because I knew what the policy was. And I thought, okay, this is going to be hell living in here, you know, being disfellowshipped. But you know, I guess I'll be going to the meetings or whatever, and we ain't gonna be sitting. I'm gonna be sitting in the back, and she's gonna be sitting in the front, and that's just the way this is gonna be. I hate this, but you know, I had no idea. My mother came home and said, "You gotta leave. You gotta leave the house." And that was pretty much the only thing that she said to me meaningful from the time I was disfellowshipped until ever she died. And so never had another meaningful relationship with her. And I never understood why she might have asked me to leave, but it goes into this video. She was pioneering at the time.
Those positions, man. Those positions.
And I'm sure she was told. Yeah. And I never realized that until years later.
Yes.
Oh, yes. She was pioneering. She couldn't have me in the house.
Yeah, they would have had to remove her from the list. Cause when I moved to Maryland with my pioneer partners, it was four girls, four of us. And we were you know, like serving where the need was great in a big city, right? Because we were like right outside of DC. But one of the sisters had a friend in New Jersey. And she said, "Well, you know what? You should move down to Maryland with us because, you know, we're regular pioneering and this and that and everything." I didn't know anything about her background. I just knew one day she showed up to our house to move in with us. And lo and behold, we found out that she was public reproof or something like that. Mm-hmm. And the elders told us that we had to get her out of our house or all of us would be removed from the pioneer ranks. Mm-hmm. So we had to get her out of there. So she was only
that's what people don't know that. I didn't know that. No. I grew up in an organization. I did not know that you can't be in the house. And that's something that they wouldn't tell you because that's in the Shepherd book. That's not in your publications.
You won't get that. Yeah, you won't get access to that. Yeah. Yeah. They dangle those positions over these men. And they have to decide, do I go with my family or do I go with these crazy brothers?
Right.
And so in the training video, the Watchtower, you know, service department or teaching committee, whoever put this thing together, they wanted to take it right through the entire conclusion. And that's what we like to take a look at is how, you know, how they will be training elders. We don't know if this is going to eventually launch and become part of Watchtower. Might say we can't. It's already out. We don't want this to go any further. Let's redo it. Let's scrap it. But we know this is what they do. This is what they do. You know, this is what they do. So when we get those witnesses who, and every witness is like, nah, this is it. This is the true culture of Jehovah's Witnesses when it comes to higher education.
This is right straight from the horse's mouth, right?
Let's take a look at what these guys.
Please open.
Okay, ready?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Now, brothers, please open your shepherd book to chapter 8. You'll notice paragraph 30 discusses when a member of an appointed man's household pursues higher education. And paragraph 32, which outlines the procedure for reviewing the qualifications of such a man. Now, what are your observations? Brother Williams, please.
Brother Brown has served faithfully for many years. But the question that's within paragraph number 30 is important. How is he viewed by the congregation? Sad to say, the actions of his family have caused him to lose the respect of the congregation. In fact, some publishers have mentioned that if they need scriptural advice on family life, they'll just talk to another elder.
Thank you for those comments, Brother Williams. Brother Anderson, please.
The same paragraph says, if an appointed brother's children pursue higher education, does his life pattern show that he puts kingdom interests first in his life? I don't think any of us can honestly say that Brother Brown's family is viewed as putting kingdom interests first in their life. Their conversations aren't spiritual, and I don't think the family, the wife, or the daughters have ever regular or auxiliary pioneered.
That is a cause for concern. Brother Miller, please.
I agree with those comments. And in addition, the last question in paragraph 30 asks, does the pursuit of higher education interfere with regular meeting attendance, meaningful participation in field service, or other theocratic activities? His girls are not visible in the ministry. And because of their class schedule, they rarely are at meetings. it's obvious that spiritual things have become second place in their life.
So it appears that they're drifting spiritually. Brother Anderson, please.
Yeah. And 1 Peter 5:3 says an overseer should be an example to the flock. But the reality is the family is a poor example. And they're having an influence on other young ones in the congregation who are now also considering pursuing higher education.
Now, looking at paragraph 31, what would you, brother, say has been his response to the counsel that has been given? Brother Miller?
It hasn't been well. He's been belligerent. He's accused us of overstepping. And he keeps insisting that this is a personal family decision. He no longer has the freeness of speech, as mentioned at 1 Timothy 3:13.
And as it says in 1 Timothy 3:3, an overseer needs to be, should be reasonable and not quarrelsome. And James 3:17 reminds us wisdom from above is peaceable, reasonable, ready to obey. But sadly, he doesn't accept counsel from any of us. When we've counseled him on matters, he justifies it or minimizes it. He bullies the body. It's his experience and his opinions that have dictated outcomes. And I'm sure you've seen that today.
I did observe that. Thank you for those thoughts. Brother Williams, do you have something more to add?
Yes, I did. Initially, the first time we discussed this, we agreed that he doesn't have the respect of the body. But Brother Brown is very outspoken, and he's very skilled. He's very skilled at manipulating the rest of the body to adjusting our viewpoints towards his viewpoint.
Hmm. Thank you for sharing that. He can be rather persuasive. Is there anything else that your brothers would like to add to our consideration?
I didn't have anything more.
No. Okay. So we need to come to a decision regarding his qualifications, and we'll need to tell him the scriptural reasons why that decision is made when we invite him back to the room.
Do you mean you want us to tell him? I'm not sure. Andy always has such a hot temper. That's why it's usually easier to go along with his demands.
While that may have been true in the past, I know that you brothers want to do things that are in harmony with Jehovah's Holy Spirit and the direction from his organization. After weighing all the facts and comparing them against the scriptural qualification, and remembering to whom we're accountable, what do you brothers recommend? Brother Anderson.
I'm disappointed to say it, but I feel like we should recommend his deletion. I don't think we can say that he continues to have freeness of speech or that he's an example in presiding over his family.
I agree. In addition, he's neither peaceable or reasonable when things don't go his way.
All in favor of this recommendation? Okay, it's unanimous. So we have considered the guidelines from Jehovah's organization. You brothers have provided me with the scriptural reasons, and I support your recommendation. Brother Anderson and Brother Williams, would you like to express to Brother Brown the reasons for this decision? And Dan, could you please ask Brother Brown back to the room so that we can inform him of our unanimous decision and we can show him from the scriptures how we reached this decision? Brother Brown, thank you for your patience in waiting. After prayerfully weighing all of the facts and considering the scriptures, the body of elders unanimously decided to recommend your deletion as an elder, and I agree with them.
You muted, JT, and there you go.
There you go.
All the man did was support his kids going to school, and they have literally trashed his character. And so this is my question, Jerry. Jehovah's Witnesses have over 100,000 congregations of Jehovah's Witnesses around the world, different ethnic groups, different educational levels. You take a congregation in San Francisco, Los Angeles, Sacramento, you know, Sacramento area, elders are educated, professional. What will be their view many times? Then you take a congregation where the brothers are maybe of meager means. What will their view? The inconsistency that how this will be applied, man, because everybody, you know, I tell people all the time, and if there's nothing you understand, understand this. As a Jehovah's Witness, your life depends on those three elders who are on your judicial committee. Do not think that you will get the same application, interpretation, understanding, patience, loving, and as you will get somewhere else. So every time someone goes in a back room with three elders, it's a crap shot. Mm-hmm. You don't know what it's like rolling the dice. You don't know who you're going to get back there. And that is why people will go back in those rooms, come out, and you don't hear anything about it. Other folks go back in there and it becomes well known. And so this is because of the inconsistency. I cannot imagine, man, you have a congregation, man, over here, the elders' kids are going to college. And this congregation over here, the elders got deleted because their kids were going to college.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they even had somebody there's a sister who called me and her son was really tall and he was playing ball. And so they mm-hmm. were trying to delete her husband from a position as an elder because he was letting his son play basketball. But they woke up and I think all of their kids are now going to college.
Yeah.
Woke up good.
Just a question to the audience. How many of you personally or you actually know of someone who got that visit or that call from the teacher, the guidance counselor, or the coach to someone's parents, and the parents told them, my child will not be doing that? That is one of the most common things, Jerry, we hear are people mm-hmm. relating that experience of that, you know, the coach stopped by and talked to my mom and daddy, and they said, no. And it has impacted their life for decades. Yeah.
I had that happen. And when I was in high school, my senior year, I was in something called the Quiz Bowl, which is an academic thing. And our Quiz Bowl happened to be on television. And we actually went to the national championships. So, but I remember that not being a problem because the elders of my congregation thought it was a good thing because they thought that the perception of Jehovah's Witnesses that they were dumb. And we had one that was on TV and I was smart. But here's the one thing so when it came to time at one point, there was a tournament. So we were on a few times. And when I got near the end, we actually ended up winning the tournament. But when it got near the end, they started interviewing us and saying, hey, what are you going to do after high school? And everybody, of course, this is an academic thing. So everybody's like, well, I'm going to Harvard and Brown and whatever, you know, I have all these big, I was a senior too. People had already got accepted to school.
Yeah.
What are you going to do, Jerry Minor? I'm thinking about going into printing business. Now to me,
I'm not laughing at you, man.
To me, I was like, that's the best explanation I can give. I'm on TV for a 3-second interview. Do you know that they got down on me for saying like that was your chance to give a witness for Jehovah?
Oh my God.
And I was like, I said I was going to print business. Like, that's not enough. That's like you going into print business. I'm like, well, how am I supposed to say I'm going to work? I want to go work in Walk Hill, Bethel. You don't know what, okay, it's a worldwide organization, the Jehovah Witness. It's in New York. That's where they print, but I'm going in print business. You know, yeah, my mother got down on me. He's like, that was your chance to give a good witness, and you didn't do it.
Oh my God.
And that was why I let you do that. 18-year-old, I let you do. But yeah,
you were standing.
Thought about that. I would have never thought to do that because when I was standing before Pharaoh, I was not trying to tell people I was a Jehovah's Witness.
No,
you know,
no. Oh, that's messed up.
Yeah. How am I going to explain that?
And you know what's ironic about that, Jerry, is that One set of elders would have said, this is a good opportunity to give a witness. Another set of elders would have said, you seeking fame and fortune, trying to make a name yep. for yourself. I mean, and that's why I was telling you, man, it don't, who those guys are in your kingdom hall will determine. So that's the same thing will happen with this education. You have circuit overseers who, as they roll through the circuit, they will probably be just clipping guys off. And yep. then you have others where they will not. And nice. So the inconsistency, man, is just going to be off the chain, just off the chain.
You know, we would get together, some of the brothers, we would get together and play basketball. But it depended on who your circuit overseer was. Some circuit overseers would come by and say, oh, y'all playing basketball? I can't do that. With no explanation of why, no real explanation, just like that. And I'm like, really? So we're going by whatever circuit overseer comes by. And then the new circuit overseer say it's okay to play ball. We can play ball. That's crazy. And that's insane.
Crazy. Well, we had a speaking of circuit overseers, this one sister in our congregation, she was really just so fanatical. But like you said, Jerry, it depends on what the circuit overseer says. So we went to this Chinese restaurant. This is like off the subject a little bit. But she was like, oh, you know, the fortune cookie. The circuit overseer was reading the fortune cookie. So we could read the fortune cookie at the Chinese yeah. restaurant. It was crazy. Yeah. Just nuts, you know? Yeah. I mean, they have so much control over people, you know?
Yes. yeah. Yes, I mean, when you think about this, think about for the ministerial servant in the congregation who is trying to become an elder and he sees this happen. Well, he already knows what I got to do with my kids.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the type of peer pressure. This is the type of culture type thing that is exerted without a word being said. As I, you know, I always tell people, you will never find in the Watchtower where it says, thou shall not go to college. Mm-hmm. But the entire culture does that. Here's, mm-hmm. you know, one of the things we did, we called our channel Critical Thinkers. The reason we did that is because from what we could tell, that was probably one of the biggest reasons we messed up and got involved. We did not do much critical thinking. You know, we just accepted whatever we were told. Witness come by, and every week you just accept it. And as a result, here we are. If we had been critical thinkers and had information, we could have went over that. And so when you consider how this plays out, here's the question. And I think you had mentioned this earlier. Think about this. You have an elder who just a few weeks ago, and I remember, I think it was like, it was a letter that was sent to all the congregations, especially in the United States. And they told the elders, don't make no public announcement. Don't do that. We need you to privately go around and find out who got college degrees and got degrees in these fields and so forth and talk to them about helping out the society. And then it stated, but don't say anything and don't make people think that we're encouraging people to go to college. That's mm-hmm. what they wrote in a letter to the elders in the congregation. Now, imagine the same elders saying to himself, wait a minute. I went around just 3 weeks ago and asked five brothers and sisters who got college degrees, doctor's degrees, legal degrees. And now you're telling me I can't even have my son do that? I mean, the inconsistency, the hypocrisy, man. Someone, I read something once and I said, this is profound. This is so true. The Watchtower makes the Pharisees look like amateurs. They make them look like amateurs. And that is true. I mean, these guys have got this thing down to a science. They are really good at it. One of the things that Lady C, when we was looking over material, was the frequently asked questions. Very mm-hmm. interesting how the Watchtower has a public persona and they have a private persona. Mm-hmm. And if you read the Watchtower, especially like the question from the frequently asked question, the appearance or the thought that they will give people who are not witnesses is that, oh, yeah, you ask any Jehovah, if any person who's not a witness were to ask, I mean, what's y'all guys view on education? Oh, it's a personal matter. It's up to the individual. It's up to the individual. And right. But what they leave out a very important part, and that is they don't mention the part that there's ramifications that can come with going to college.
That's right. That's right.
And so telling a person that, you know, it's a free choice, that's like saying, well, fornication is a free choice. You know, that's a mm-hmm. personal choice if you want to commit fornication. But the witness would never argue that there's no ramifications that come along with it. Mm-hmm. Well, the same thing with people who want to go to school. There are ramifications. And this video, this dramatization clearly outlines that you will have some problems. And all you need is some wild elders and some wild circuit overseers. And being that the circuit overseer now is in charge of all appointments, I mean, you go in the back room, you're dead man walking. If you have a circuit overseer who don't like, you have a circuit overseer who don't like elders, who have kids going to college, you're dead in the water. You can't even appeal it, Holly. The watchtower has now made the circuit overseer as their backstop. He's the last man you can deal with when it comes to appointment. Whatever he says goes. We accept whatever he says. Now, if he rolls in town and this is what he likes, you're in trouble. And this is what Jerry does. Go ahead.
I was going to ask Jerry. So, like, when you got disfellowshipped and your mother asked you to leave, what did you do? How did things pan out for you when you first left? Yeah.
I mean, it's even worse than that. So, the prospect of getting disfellowshipped, I tried to commit suicide.
Oh.
I was in the hospital for at least 2 months. I can't remember. Also, there was another Jehovah's Witness kid that was in the hospital with me and had also tried to commit suicide. He was gay. He ended up leaving whatever, but I don't know what he's doing now, but after I got out of the hospital, they had my judicial committee and disfellowshipped me, which I was surprised by. And for the 2 months that I was in the hospital, I wasn't going to meetings, and so for me that was a lot of my falling away. Then I had never even considered not being a Jehovah's Witness until I was not going to meetings for a while. And I was getting angry. I was getting angry because nobody was visiting me. That was number one thing. The brothers weren't coming to see me. Nobody was helping me. I was depressed and they still disfellowshipped me. And so when my mother asked me to leave, well, first of all, I said, okay, when they disfellowshipped me, I said, okay, well, when is the next time we're going to meet? And they said, well, that's it. When you want to get reinstated, you can write a letter. Yeah. I was like, oh, I thought you can help me. I mean, you do realize I just got out of hospital, right? I tried to kill myself. So I thought maybe the best help I could get was from you brothers. And we could sit down and then, And I get home and my mother's like, well, you got to go. And that really made it all crash down for me. I was like, this is not God's organization. This cannot be. At that point in time, I still believed in maybe the theology. Or whatever, but I was like, this ain't God's organization. This ain't at least this congregation, these elders, and also kind of figured out like the elder that was on the body that was the coordinating, or at that point in time, I forgot what they called the head elder,
presiding overseer.
Yeah,
now the Kobe.
He was the one that was kind of took charge of my judicial committee, and he worked with my dad. And my dad didn't like him. And my dad wasn't a Jehovah's Witness. They didn't live together. And so that gets me to the point of what happened, what I did when my mother asked me to leave. I did have my father, who I didn't live with, who was divorced, but I had my father's family to support me. And I lived with him and started going to college. And it really gave me a chance to have another life, and that's what I did.
Right.
Yeah.
When did you find out? So like you say, okay, sorry about your situation about trying to commit suicide and getting disfellowshipped and all that kind of stuff and losing your mom. Now, when you started going to college and everything, now you said you still believed in the theology.
Mm-hmm.
So when did you really wake up to learn the truth about the truth? How long did it take you to do that?
You know, back then it was like there was really not much internet. But it was a little bit, and that, a lot of that stuff was like what I considered like, oh, this is just like this apostate material.
Okay.
And I did. I looked on it. I was a very early adopter to the internet, and I did look at some of the stuff that was on there. And some of the stuff was like, oh, okay, yeah. Some of the stuff I knew, like Beth Sarum, I knew about that for some reason. I don't know, maybe just other witnesses that talked about it or whatever. I never thought it was a bad thing. I just thought it was like, oh, they just got something a little bit wrong, but they still might live in that house. Well, I'm gonna get that house in the new system.
Yeah.
Right.
But I still like a lot of people, I think, and we talked about this a little bit too offline, But for a lot of people, this is like a self-help kind of thing. I think that's what attracts a lot of people to the Jehovah's Witnesses, and especially for people like my mom, who grew up in the inner city, who grew up poor. You know, for people like that, it's a way for them to have connections. It's a way for them to be straight. And a lot of people have seen a lot of hypocrisy in churches and stuff like that, especially, you know, in the Black church, so to speak. They may have seen, you know, the stereotypical preacher that has all the money and has all the wealth, and all the parishioners are poor. And so all a lot women. And all the women. Yes. That was my mother's experience. Right. She wanted to be. She wanted to go to church. That was her only way, I think, of her idea of bettering herself, you know, morally, was to be involved in a church. But she couldn't find one that was moral enough until she found the Jehovah's Witnesses.
Wow.
And you know, and it's one of those things that, like, it's an emotional thing. Once you get tied up into it, once you're told over and over again that this is the truth, and that these people are, you know, really have something that the other churches don't, because we kick people out that's like that. You know, we kick people out that if our minister has all the women, well, they're not in anymore. And that appeals to people.
Yeah.
You know, and I forgot what the question was, but I think that's.
But, yeah, just saying the truth that when you learn the truth about the truth?
Oh, the truth about the truth. Yeah. Mm-hmm. For me, it was just an ongoing process.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it wasn't until lately, in the last couple of years, you know, I had moved on with my life. I became an actor. You know, I went to Saturday Live and stuff, and I kind of lost contact with my mother. But she decided to just completely, you know, have no contact as the years went by. You know, before, the only contact that I would have is every once in a while I would call her, you know, and say, hey, what are you doing? I love you. And that would be it. That was basically the whole conversation. And she,
they treat you. It's been described. We were kind of fortunate. We was able to get both our parents out. It's been described as they treat you as if you're dead.
If you're dead,
that's the way people describe it. That their families treat them as if they're dead. As some people have been told, I do not have a daughter. Mm-hmm. I have no daughter. I got two sons, but I have no daughter. One of the posters, one of the someone in the chat made an interesting comment. Says my mother got that call from my brother's coach. He played ball like Michael Jordan. My mother told him no and offered him a free home Bible study, boy.
Oh, my God.
Crazy, man.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
Okay, so JT, this is happening when I was in grade school. My mother first started studying. I was getting taken out. I got taken out and put into a different school, an accelerated school. And the teachers were telling my mother, hey, you know, your son is very smart. He should be doing this. He should be in this program. Him in the regular program, the other kids are holding him back. And so I remember on the way home, I was like, what do you think, Mom? You think I'm a little kid. I'm seven years old. I said, you think I'm smart? One of the smartest people in the world? He's like, no. I'm like,
yeah.
I'm like, maybe one of the 10 smartest kids in the world. She's like, no, you're not. I'm like, you don't know.
Oh, my goodness.
But there was that, you know, that, like, no, we're not doing any of that. The new system is coming. For us, it was always the new system is coming. And why do you want to do that? even down to, like, now, I'm still dealing with my teeth because my mother didn't want to go to a normal dentist and get me braces because she's like, the new system is going to come. Your teeth are going to be
fixed.
Fixed. And now
it's really interesting.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different things that people deal with this new system thing. JT knew a sister who wouldn't get her eyes fixed, and so she ended up going blind. And one of the ones that I heard that was really crazy was a brother married a sister that was 20 years older than him because in the new system, we were all going to get old. We were all going to grow young again. It's crazy stuff like that, you know, just looking for just anything to latch onto, to do, not do, whatever. But it was just the things that they make us do or think about just because of that new system. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so tragic that, you know, people who don't get their education, who don't save money. There was a sister, because we've been on the channel for so long, we get emails from so many people. We've spoken to, I want to say thousands of people. Because in the early stages of this activism, I was on the phone all the time, yeah. Right? And this one sister related a story about how the Bethelites that had gotten kicked out of Bethel because of the downsizing were at the soup kitchen. They were homeless. Wow. They had no place to go. And it was pretty bad that all of these things. And so the Watchtower tries to show you, oh, where's your money going? Oh, mm-hmm. It's going to help these people in these countries that are war-torn or these countries that have had natural disasters and stuff like that. And we know this money is going to pay for these child cases, right? Mm-hmm. And selling these kingdom halls and trying to get money from people. And then these people at Bethel that spent decades up in age, they did not give them any financial assistance. And then when Toni Morris got kicked out, we did a video about that a couple of weeks ago, and thanks to Blue Envelope that we were able to get this information from him, and because he did a video about that, and we kind of piggybacked off that his story about what we knew, and they bought him a house. Well, actually, they didn't really buy him a house.
They bought a house for him to live in.
Yeah, they let him live there.
As long as
they
keep his mouth shut.
Stay there until. You know, he can stay there as long as he's alive. He
keeps his mouth shut. No Ray Franz. We ain't having no more Ray Franz books.
Exactly. Right.
GT, what do you think happened in that situation? I mean, you were at Bethel.
I don't really know, but if I had to speculate, and you know, Watchtower is notorious for speculating, so you know, and claiming God told him. But yeah, they always claim God told him, but it's really speculation.
Right.
I think it probably has something to do with CSA. If you gave me a list of things to pick, I would say CSA. And here's the reason why. We know that he served as a circuit overseer in Pennsylvania. He was in Pennsylvania. We know that Pennsylvania has cases that are bad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The whole state is basically on lockdown. So we know that companies, they will get rid of him, you know, get rid of staff who can pose a problem for them down the road. Mm-hmm. So just being realistic, can you imagine if he gets a subpoena?
Yep.
Or he gets called in, and he still has title governing body. Don't look good at all. Yep. So,
and then the questions they can ask him too, you know, as a governing body.
Here's the reason why I say this: when the Watchtower, at one time, a brother could be reappointed as an elder who had these issues in his background.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it was known as living it down. Enough years have passed where he's lived it down. Mm-hmm. Well, the Watchtower realized a few years back that the courts didn't care about how many years it's been. And so what they did, they had a Watchtower study article. I can't remember what it was, but they had a Watchtower study article where basically they said anybody who's had this stuff in your background, if you're an elder, ministerial servant, pioneer, you need to step aside. And so anybody, 10, 20, 30 years ago, if there's any record in your background, you cannot serve as an elder. Well, they only did that because the law was coming after them. Mm-hmm. If the law had not come after them, they would still be allowing them to live it down. So those are the kind of issues that you deal with when you deal with the elders, the governing body, and those guys. I mean, it's very sad. Mm. We appreciate your time. We told you we weren't going to try to keep you forever. We know your time is limited, and we was really thankful that you were able to give us the time to come on the show.
Hey man, it flies by. I don't get enough. Don't feel like I get enough time to complain.
Yeah. I'm telling you. But look, do you have any final comments that you'd like to make to our audience?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if anybody gets a chance, and especially for witnesses that are in what we call PMO, get a chance to look at that video. I think that for any witness to get a chance to look at that video, they should not have a problem looking at it. It came from the governing body. It came from Bethel. It's not doctored. It's not, it's straight from there. Get a chance to see what your organization is doing. If I was a witness, even if I was, I would have really wanted to see that. And so you should look at it.
Yeah. So would I. And in fact, I don't think there's not one Jehovah. You'd be hard pressed to have a Jehovah and say, well, I'm not supposed to be who wouldn't look at it. Because when you get the witnesses away from other people. That's why we have the number of people we have on our site who are witnesses is amazing. And yet nobody at the Kingdom Hall knows, but they'll come up here. They'll come in. In fact, sometimes people, they're the first or second person to post. They might say, JT, I don't care what you say. You just lying. But they're the first person posted. I'm like, what you doing? And so they're here. But yeah. They would not let nobody at the Kingdom Hall know it. They'd be scared to death. Man.
Well, I think it's therapeutic for people that are at the Kingdom Hall because one sister, she emailed us some years ago and asked us if we could do a video about how kids can't stay up late at the meetings and go to the Kingdom Hall and try to, you know, be like a 10-year-old kid or something. And she wanted us to do a video about that, you know. I mean, I'm just saying, you know, and she was a practicing Jehovah's Witness, and she watched our channel, and she put a request in, you know.
Well, you know what? That seems to be the only way that you can get any change. And I would invite, you know, like, I don't know what's going to happen to the Jehovah's Witness organization, if it's going to go away or whatever. I assume that it's going to be around. And if it's going to be around, hey, man, come on. Like, y'all, this seems like the only way that they can make changes is from people like us, you know, and family members. And people saying like, hey, y'all making it hard for us on the outside. I know that you got this thing going on, this cult or whatever. You're trying to control these people, but you're making it hard for the whole world. Yeah. You can change some of these rules because they're not Bible-based. Just go ahead. Just go ahead and change it.
And they can.
They've done another thing. Yeah.
You can I don't know if the witnesses will ever go away because religion has a very unique way of morphing itself. I mean, the Catholic Church has been here for about 2,000 years or so, and you would never think that a church that used to kill people would have any members, yet it's the largest denomination in Christianity. I think what will happen, and we'll just continue to see it, is that the organization will morph. For those who have left, one of the things that we all say is we don't even recognize this organization no more.
Right.
That's and we're like people who were back in 75, people back in 45, back in 25. The organization has just changed. And it does that to survive. That's why it has to morph in order. And so right now the witnesses are becoming more mainstream. They got the little fancy music now, sound like any other Christian music. They got the witnesses swaying back and forth at the Kingdom Hall for the dance. Man, you know, goodness well, when we were going to the Kingdom Hall, you got slapped upside. Your mom would have slapped you upside your head.
Boy, oh my goodness.
And so then the witnesses swaying back at the meeting and everything. And so they're just morphing.
I don't think they're showing themselves to be mainstream by deleting their leadership from positions because of college.
Oh, that's legal.
Backwards, you know what I mean?
Well, that's legal. That's legal. That's a whole different story.
Right. That's the thing. There's something. Some things you can't go by. Like, how are you going to change the blood policy now?
Yeah.
Just, you know, how are you going to change this fellowshipping policy even? I would be so mad if you were to all of a sudden go like, well, you can talk to just fellowship relatives. And I'd be like, what? My mother lived a whole life and now you're just going to change. So that makes a lot of that kind of stuff, you know.
It's going to be interesting, man. Keep this in mind. They changed it when it came to unbaptized people.
Right.
There was a time when an unbaptized publisher would be treated like a disfellowship person. I know because my sister, she left at that time when that policy was enforced. And to this very day, man, 20, 30, 40 years later, when my sister sees certain witnesses, some of the older friends, they remember the night they read her off, they won't talk to her. And the Watchtower changed that probably 35 years ago. You can talk to the people who were not baptized if they, you know, they're told they're no longer publishing. But those old friends remember, she was kicked out. I can't talk to her. And it's like people still talking about the Gentile, the generation of 1914. They're still witnesses talking about before the generation of 1914. They still talk because they're stuck. They're still stuck.
But you got to remember that people are looking for, their future. And a lot of people don't really want to go to heaven. And when the Watchtower talks about the paradise, you know, you can see yourself living on paradise because you're already on earth.
Right.
I think that people try to make the Watchtower fit for them for the prize of living forever on earth. That they just want that. You know, so and if you get your first opportunity to it's like going like looking for a car. They say most people will go back and they may look at all these cars on the lot, but they'll go back to that first car that they saw. So the witness has been told by these people, the recruit is told by Jehovah's Witnesses that this is a good place to be. And so they may be shopping around at other churches, but then they go back to this paradise earth because it sounds so good. I'm going to eat some big old strawberries, play with some wild animals, have a pina colada under the tree. They like that. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's like, you know, Alice in Wonderland or one of these, you know, fantasy Cinderella type stories, being a Jehovah's Witness, you know, because that stuff is not true, you know, but people want to make it true. They want these things to come true. And that's the reason why some Jehovah's Witnesses, if you even sound like you're going to go on the other side, they will cut you off so quick.
You know, JT, my mother was an orphan from 5 years old. And when she was told that she had the possibility of seeing her mother again, that just never left her. You know, and how could, see, that's why a lot of these times, these are emotional decisions that people are making. Your wife is, you know, gotten into this thing and she really is into it and she's emotionally, and so do you emotionally into it. You know, these are emotional decisions. They're not. And so when you talk about critical thinking, critical thinking can work, but critical thinking don't even come into it when it becomes to emotion. When you're talking about people's families, when you're talking about how involved they are, when you're talking about how people may feel like it keeps them straight, it keeps them on the straight and narrow, you know, they change their life. They don't smoke or drink anymore or something like that, you know, which is a lot of things you can do to stop doing that. But it's an emotional decision, you know? And so that's what keeps people trapped, you know, in this, and that kind of thing can stop people from talking to their relatives and doing things that just seem so unnatural to the rest of the world. But for somebody that's involved in something like that, it just seems like that this is something that they should be doing, and they're doing it for good.
You're absolutely right. And there was a lady on my job, and she was so upset. She wasn't a Jehovah's Witness, but she was a Mary Kay salesperson. She told me, she said, I'm telling you right now, this Mary Kay sales is costing me too much money. She said that I thought I was going to enjoy it, this and that. So she had to tell the lady that was in her, she was in the lady's downline. And so we were talking and she said, oh yeah. So I went back to Facebook to let her know that I would go ahead on and refer any of my clients to her. And she said, do you know, she had unfriended me on Facebook and blocked me just because she could no longer be in her downline selling Mary Kay.
Oh, yes. You know,
that was terrible.
same type of thing. Yeah. It's the same type of thing.
Yeah. So someone posted, and unfortunately, their name flipped in reverse. So I can't make out what it is.
It's Dirt by Dirt.
What's that?
Dirt by Dirt.
Okay, I'm.
I can barely
read when it's straight, man. So
oh my God.
Work with me on that one. So I can barely read when it's straight. My mom, we telling you, right. but they said
right.
Yeah, but they agree with you, Jerry. They said good point. Change those rules. They are not Bible based, and that's what makes it so. That's what's probably the most painful part. Is that we know that the wise are, you know, they got things they teach in the Bible. Don't steal, don't lie, don't shoot your neighbor because the dog pee on your spinning rims or something. We got that. But man, the wise are got teaching they didn't get into the Bible, man. I mean, they just make it up on the fly.
Yeah.
And you got to accept it. Elders have to enforce it, and it just go, if as they say, it flows downhill, you know, and so that's the thing.
Right.
But Jerry, thank you so much for coming, man. And
thank you.
For our audience, we'd like to thank the audience for coming out on a Saturday night. We know you could have been out in the club tonight, but we appreciate you stopping by. And once again, you know, this is the type of video that if, when you see it, it's simply, as I tell you all the time, this is the type of stuff that gives us a confirmation that we left and we made the right decision.
Yeah. And then for everybody that's listening, just keep in mind that I realize everybody don't want to go to college or they don't want to go get extra education, but some education is better than no education. And one of the things that people are going to have to remember, even after high school, they're still learning that you could do. So it does. Learning is universal. So it doesn't always have to occur in a classroom. And there's this one author that I listen to, and he said he tries to read about 40 books a year. So it's not all about, I got to go into this community college or university, but you could educate yourself, you know, through other means. And like YouTube has a university where you could go get training and all kind of stuff. And you could come over to Creative Studio and get computer training with me, you know. But I'm just telling you that, you know, some kind of education is better than nothing, because you got to keep on taking care of yourself while you are out here living in this world. So
yeah,
I'm encouraging to get educated.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that at all. Well, Jerry, thanks for being here, and wish you well out there on the West Coast. I know that y'all guys are trying to wrap up that issue with the studios and the actors and the producers and everything. We hope everything works out well for everybody involved. So,
oh yeah, don't get me started on another thing that gets me.
I know, right?
Oh my goodness!
No.
Our audience, we just want to say good night. And Jerry, could you stay on just for a few minutes? Because we just need the StreamYard to finish wrapping up the taping.
No problem.
But we just like to thank everybody for coming and supporting us this evening. And this has been JT
and Lady C.
And welcome Jerry to the Critical Thought. Yeah, this is Jerry. Absolutely. And wish you guys the very best. Y'all take care. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This program was sponsored by Critical Thinkers.